You're listening to a Prairie Punk House Companion right here on the Prairie Punk Press Network.
The views expressed by any host or any guest on the Prairie Punk House Companion are the personal views or opinions of the people who express them and do not reflect the views or opinions of anyone else on the show or any company, employer, or any other organization that the individual expressing them has or will affiliate with in the past, present, or future. Hi, everybody. You're listening to a Prairie Punk House Companion. We are on episode 15 now. My name is Neckbone.
Hi, I'm Jerbear, and I got some new Chucks, and I bet they're cooler than your Chucks.
I don't know about that. We're going to have to compare them.
All right.
Yeah.
I bet mine win.
Are you talking about mine specifically or the audience's? The royal your?
The royal your. Everyone listening, my Chucks are cooler than yours.
Wow. That's a bold statement. Because there are upwards of 10 to 15 people listening who might have pretty cool Chucks.
So yeah, mine are cooler.
All right. Well, all right, everybody, send in pictures of your Chucks to Jerbear specifically so that we can compare. Yeah. And then you'll have post yours too, I guess. All right. Anyway, since Converse is not giving us any money for advertising, I guess we'll move on. Converse, if you'd like to give us money, we will accept your money. But you still can't tell us what to say.
It's episode 15. We're going to do something different this time. Mm-hmm. We are going to decide once and for all who is the greatest punk rock band of all time.
Mm-hmm.
Are we not just according to Neckbone and Jerbear, but the definitive greatest punk rock band of all time.
Right.
Undisputed.
Mm-hmm.
You can't dispute our final decision.
It's true. You can't. And we already got word that the punk king, Ian MacKaye, will be signing off on whoever we decide the greatest punk band of all time is. Mm-hmm. So isn't he the punk king?
I don't know. I think Fat Mike might be because he has the punk rock museum.
Oh, fuck, you're
right. Ian MacKaye just has a red beanie.
He does. But man, he has it in every fucking interview. You gotta appreciate the dedication to that
the
fucking
red beanie,
dude.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or does he just have a drawer full of them?
You know, it might be like an Einstein thing where he just has like the same one of everything for every day of the week.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's what it is. So, yeah, we are going to be going through each of our five favorite bands in no particular order. And we each also came up with five honorable mentions. We'll be talking significantly less about the honorable mentions because, as stated in, you know, the terminology, it is a mention.
So what we're going to do. So we each have our five bands. So we're going to go back and forth, list our favorite bands.
Yep.
Then Neckbone is going to choose two of my bands to keep on the list. And I'm going to choose two of Neckbone's bands to keep on the list.
Yeah.
And then we will whittle it down to one.
Ooh.
And that one will be the winner of the best punk rock band of all time.
And with each band, you will get a little bit of some factoids about the band and also some personal stories and why we like each of these bands and why they made our top five list. For me, it was really, really difficult to pick five bands.
Yeah. And, you know, just in the interest of transparency, my top five list is pretty fluid.
Mm-hmm.
It changes from day to day, except for today. This is the top five. And then, you know, whoever wins. And that's the best punk rock band of all time. According to science.
Two of the bands on my list, while I wouldn't say they've been on my top five list every time, have always been on my top 10 list for at least ever since I've heard them. So two of them, it is pretty fluid. It's a pretty fluid list, but two of the bands, and I will point those bands out, when I get to them, are always at the very least on my top 10 list. And today they just happen to be on my top five list. So, hey, good for you, legendary punk bands that our podcast
made it, that made it
recognize. Right. And that, that the punk king is it Fat Mike? Do we decide it's Fat Mike?
I don't know. I mean, I don't want to give him that honor.
No.
Really.
No.
I was just making a joke about the punk rock museum.
Oh, okay. Well, I know you wouldn't say maybe it's...
Ty.
Oh, Ty?
Ty.
Okay, Ty.
He could be the punk rock god.
Okay.
King, whatever.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. I'm okay with him being punk rock god king. He gets the hyphenated title and everything. So I'm going to go first. I usually try to make Jerry Bear go first. So this time I'm going to go first. And my first band, are we going to go, I mentioned one, you mentioned one, then I mentioned my next one. Okay. So the first one, and this one was difficult because I had to choose between three different bands that are all part of the same shared universe. And Jerry Bear, I think you already know what I'm going to say. Yeah. So my first band is the Subhumans.
Yeah.
And they are all part of what I call the Dickiverse, which is bands fronted by Dick Lucas, to include Culture Shock and Citizen Fish as well. And it was tough to decide. Well, Culture Shock, there was really only one album I really got into for Culture Shock.
Yeah.
I mean, they were only around for 3 years.
Right.
And so that album, I mean, all their music's good, but that one album I still listen to as part of my regular rotation. For me, between the Subhumans and Citizen Fish, it was really, really tough because, oddly enough, I owned a Citizen Fish album before I actually owned a Subhumans album.
Oh, wow.
And in fact, the first band I had ever heard of in the Dickiverse was Culture Shock.
And oh, wow.
That's because I went over to the Kansas Street Apartments.
Uh-huh.
And
Eminem was probably playing it.
They had Sean put on an album called Go Wild by Culture Shock. And I had always kind of made fun of ska.
Mm-hmm.
And that was
rightly kind of, so.
Yeah, right. And that was a ska punk album. And I thought I was going to make fun of it. And my mind was blown. I thought, fuck, this is a good fucking album, man. Yep, Sean put on Culture Shock. And I said, you know, what is that? And I wrote it down and I went to the record store and they didn't have it because
weird.
Fucking course they didn't. I did. I think it was at, I want to say it was at Yesterday's Discs maybe.
Probably.
It was not a Camelot Music for sure. Because they never had anything other than like they might have had like Green Day and Rancid and shit like that. But
yeah,
they weren't going to have anything Culture Shock, but I couldn't find Culture Shock, but I did find Citizen Fish. Mm-hmm. And Aaron had told me, like, hey, if you like Culture Shock, it's the same dude. You'll like Citizen Fish.
Mm-hmm.
So I bought Citizen Fish. It was wider than a postcard. Yes. And, yeah, that album was phenomenal. That's still one of my favorite albums to this day. And so I got really into Citizen Fish. And at this point, I had still not even listened to the Subhumans. Like, I knew who they were. And I had put together that Dick Lucas was the front man for the Subhumans, who had at that point broken up like years before.
Yeah.
They did reunite and are actually together today, but for several years, they were not a band anymore. And I don't remember how exactly I ended up listening to the Subhumans. Finally, I think I was at somebody's house and I saw that they had a Subhumans
probably
album.
Kansas Street.
Yeah. Probably Kansas Street again. That's how I discovered a lot of music, honestly, just hanging out on Kansas Street. But yeah, somebody put on a Subhumans album and then I went out and, got some Subhumans, and I think the first, album I got from the Subhumans was actually, it was an EP. It was Rats.
Yeah.
And I found that at Love Garden in Lawrence, Kansas.
Yeah.
And the cover was just, the cover struck me and I had to have it. So I got Rats.
That's a good record.
It's a phenomenal record. Yeah. And so they definitely, they're on my list. I'm going to say the Subhumans just because they kicked it all off. They were the ones.
Sure. Yeah.
If not for Subhumans, Culture Shock wouldn't exist. Citizen Fish wouldn't exist. So let's start it with the OG. But I do have a personal story about Citizen Fish, that we have told on a previous episode. Yeah. So Jer Bear and I went and saw Citizen Fish in Lawrence, Kansas in 1999, I think it was.
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, it would have been.
Mm-hmm. And it was a great show. We hung out with Dick Lucas after the show. I think we were buying him drinks, if I remember right.
Yeah, we bought him a lot of drinks. We were kind of being punishers, but
yeah.
I don't think he minded. I think he was having a good time. We were probably a bit tedious, but
yeah,
you know, we kept buying him Guinness.
Right.
So
right. I'm sure we were, and I'm sure we came across like you know, a couple of dorks in a fucking parasocial relationship with, you know, this guy that we'd never met before or who had never met us before, but you know, you feel like you, the bands and stuff, you feel like you know them, even though you know, you fucking don't.
Right. When, you know, being 21 years old and you know, learning who you are, it's really easy to have those parasocial relationships with people you've never met because, you know, young minds confuse, you know, association and relating to music to knowing someone. That was a really good show. It was a really good time.
It was.
He was super chill. He was very, very, very nice and patient with our dumb asses.
He was.
And you know, he didn't have any fucking rock star attitude or anything like that. He was super chill.
Right. And you know, this is in 1999. He'd already been playing in, you know, multiple successful bands for two decades at that point.
Yeah.
You know, let's see. Subhumans
pretty close to it.
1980.
Yeah.
They are, so they're from Warminster. It's kind of near Wiltshire. Bath basically is the big city it's near in kind of the West Country of England. Cool. So they are, an anarcho-punk, English anarcho-punk band. And then later that night, we went back to Kansas City, and that was the night that I got stabbed in front of our apartment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's fucked up.
Yeah.
So before that show, another funny story about, funny to me anyway, about Citizen Fish. Aaron M. was on somebody's computer. This is the early days of like chat rooms and very basic websites and things like that. And Dick Lucas had a web page or something and where he talked about his bands. And I really appreciate clever wordplay. And he was talking about his music and his bands and things that he liked. And so he's you know, talking about great music and said, here's a list. And then it was a grocery list. And then he was like, and here's a list of music. And then listed like bands or something to that effect. I just thought it was funny to say, here's a list. And then it's a random list instead of pertaining to what the topic was.
But he wasn't wrong. It was a list.
It was a list.
It was, yeah.
That's something that's always stuck out to me. I don't know why.
But yeah. So even though I got stabbed at the end of the night, I am fine. I survived. Spoiler.
What?
Crazy, right?
I was worried.
Still loved, had a great time that night. Still love that band. And I did eventually get to see, never did see Culture Shock because they, I think I was like 11 when they broke up and they have not, as far as I know, ever gotten back together.
Yeah.
But the Subhumans got back together and I got to go see them in Oklahoma City. I don't remember the exact year. I want to say it was 04 maybe. What year did you go back to Wichita?
I came back in 02.
Okay, so I think it was 04 because you were already like long gone. And I don't know.
Damn, I wish I would have known about that. I would have fucking gone with you.
I don't know why. I think I assume because there were other like Wichita crew there. I don't know. I actually have no idea where you were. I think Alex was with me.
Really? Yeah, that sounds right because he's an Okie.
He's an Okie. A bunch of Okies from the Haunted Kitchen were there. And I think, if I'm remembering right, I think Kale was there. I was very surprised to see him there. Yeah. If I am remembering correctly, which I may or may not be, the Subhumans Rats was the first British anarcho-punk album I ever owned.
Nice.
I think that might have been my introduction. And there's a few songs that really stuck out to me. You know, Susan is a really interesting, it doesn't sound like your standard punk song. And then of course, Work, Rest, Play, Die really spoke to me. The next Subhumans album I got was the Day the Country Died.
Oh yeah,
which is a great fucking album. I did end up buying Go Wild by Culture Shock. Like I said, I owned on and still own on vinyl Wider Than a Postcard and Thirst from Citizen Fish. So those would be my favorite albums from those bands. I know that's three bands, and that is five albums from those three bands. But I'm lumping them all together just because I want to, and this is our podcast. We can do whatever the fuck we want. So
that's
my reasoning. And all of these bands were on multiple different labels. Blurg, I think, is probably the one that we all remember from the albums. But they were also Citizen Fish, anyway, at one point was on Lookout, which is synonymous with pop punk. Alternative Tentacles, which is the Dead Kennedys label. Fat Records, which is NoFX's label. And Spider Leg, which is Flux of Pink Indians label. So
first label.
Yeah. And because of them, I discovered other bands that I at one time liked, maybe don't like so much anymore, but I did like Leftover Crack a lot.
Oh yeah.
At one point. And they did a split with them, I think in like, I want to say 02, maybe.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that.
And it's a pretty good split, but I can't really listen to Leftover Crack side anymore. Stizza is kind of a scumbag.
Yeah, he's a real piece of shit.
But yeah, there's so much more I could tell. I could sit here talking about Subhuman, Citizen Fish, Culture Shock all fucking night, honestly. They're all in my regular rotation. There is a book, if you want to know more, called Silence is No Reaction, 40 Years of Subhumans. And it's by Ian Glasper.
Okay, he's the one who wrote the book The Day the Country Died.
Oh, nice.
Which is about the wider anarcho-punk scene from the 80s. And also the next movie that we are going to review for Punk Movie Review is a documentary of the same name about the anarcho scene.
That all ties in together really nicely. I didn't even try this.
So my favorite Dick Lukaverse... or Dickiverse, whatever you said. Dickiverse would be Subvert City. And Panic at the Supermarket.
Nice. Yeah.
Those are my Dick songs.
Okay. Well, that's my first band. I probably droned on a little bit long, but what is the first band in no particular order that you are going to talk about?
I am going to pick another band from the late 70s, early 80s anarcho-punk scene, and that band is Chumbawamba. Chumbawamba is super interesting to me. Their first 7-inch, Revolution, is probably the most punk rock thing I've ever heard. It is incredible. The song Revolution is fucking incredible.
My kid loves that song already.
Yeah, it's so fucking good. And you know, then their first two 12 inches, Starving Children, Sell Records, and Never Mind the Ballots. Pictures of Starving Children Sell Records. And a lot of people, I think I heard some people say they thought it was about bands like, I don't know, punk rock bands showing pictures of starving kids on record sleeves and stuff, like crust-punk or anarcho-punk bands. But it's actually about Live Aid and Band-Aid, about how Bob Geldof, Jesus Christ.
Bob Geldof.
I kept wanting to say Gandalf. It's mocking that, about how, you know, they basically exploited starvation in Africa to sell pop records, and you know, most of the money that they made didn't go to help anyone. You know, and that kind of sums up Chumbawamba for me. Their sarcasm and wit, and it's just fucking brilliant. And you know, as those first three releases, the 7-inch and their first two full lengths are undisputably punk rock. They incorporate other genres of music a little bit, but they're still, I mean, they're straight up punk rock records. And then they started to branch out and basically turned into like a dance punk rock anarchist collective, started playing more dance music and aesthetically appealing to a wider audience while still having just brutally political anarchist lyrics.
They did a couple of folk albums too, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. They did English Rebel Songs, mm-hmm. which was English Rebel Songs from, I mean, fuck, 1,000-year-old songs up to, you know, more recent Union songs, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and after Tub Thumping, I think they went more, they started doing more folks and a cappella stuff, because that record kind of tore the band apart somewhat. There's a lot of pressure on them going from being anarchist squatters to having a record that made kajillions of dollars for a record label, which they signed to, and it was, you know, it caused a lot of controversy. Them signing that label lost them a lot of fans in the punk rock community because they, you know, thought of it as selling out. I think it was Elektra Records or something. They had songs specifically about how terrible that whatever record label was, I don't remember for sure, whichever one it was, they talked mad shit on, said, you know, it was one of the most evil record labels, and they signed to it and told people to steal the records. There's a documentary by Dunstan Bruce of Chumbawamba about the history of Chumbawamba. It is in the festival circuit still. I don't know when it's going to get a wide release, but I'm dying to see that movie.
Mm-hmm.
They were coming to Lawrence in like December 97 or January 98. I don't remember. It was right around that time. And an ice storm hit the night before the show. We were already up in Lawrence. We drove up in Boris and slid down 9th Street towards Mass, almost died, and then stayed at Brandon's house and had a like really, really fun weekend hanging out with him and Bill. I think BJ may have come over. Alan was probably there. All the Derailleur guys, I think, were there, at least for a little while. And had a lot of fun hanging out with them, but we did not get to see Chumbawamba, and I was very, very bummed out about it.
I love that early shit by Chumbawamba too. It's, in fact, I didn't know. When you told me that we were going to listen to Chumbawamba at the Annex once, I still was under the impression that all they were was that band who did the Whiskey Drink Vodka Drink song.
Tub Thumping.
And you were going to put on Chumbawamba. And I think I said, you're fucking joking, right? You're going to put on that dumb MTV ass bullshit. And this is coming from a guy who listens to pop punk. And even I was like, nah, man, you're not putting that shit on. You're like, no, I think you put on Nevermind the Ballads, maybe.
Probably.
Yeah. And
that's probably still my favorite.
It's a fucking great album. And I didn't believe you. That you had to show me the sleeve. I was like, that's not Chumbawamba. And he had to prove that it was. And I think my reaction was like
1982.
Like, I think I was just like, what the fuck happened? Like, they used to be great. This is a good album.
Yeah. Nevermind the Ballads is probably my favorite Chumbawamba record.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite song is Here's the Rest of Your Life from Nevermind the Ballads. It's like 7 minutes and it's just it's so punk rock, so fucking good. And then Homophobia and The Day the Nazi Died.
Oh, yeah.
Are there later, off their later releases are really, really good. I didn't want to not mention some of their later stuff because it's fun too. But it's just different.
Right.
Musically, it's so much different than their first three releases.
Yeah. And I at one point I had English Rebel songs on CD. I had that one in my CD sleeve case for my car back when that used to be a thing that people had.
Yeah. Sweet.
Yeah.
What's your next one?
Next one, once again, in no particular order. This is just the order I typed my notes in. My next band is the Dead Kennedys. They are a San Francisco Bay Area band formed in 1978. And I have been listening to them since high school. This is one of the earlier bands that I discovered. And it was because I don't remember who. I want to say it was Aaron M., who played me Give Me Convenience or Give Me Death, which is, I didn't find out till later, was actually a compilation album and was not a standard studio release. But that came out in 1987. And Police Truck just, I heard that song and I was like, oh, this is fucking good. Who is this? And pretty sure it was Aaron M. I don't know. It was definitely somebody. I don't think it was Oren. I don't think Oren listened to Dead Kennedys, honestly. It might have actually been Leahy. Huh. It might have been Leahy who played it for me, actually.
Huh.
I don't know. I'll have to ask him. It was either Aaron M. or Leahy or maybe Stein. Fuck, my memory sucks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's hard out there for a 40-something.
It is. It's difficult. but I've been listening to them since high school. Discovered them in high school. And so that was one of the bands that I already knew about going into Kansas Street. I think the thing that I noted first was the distinct vocals of Jello Biafra. I think maybe I am drawn to bands with distinct vocals because Dick Lucas also has very distinct vocal stylings.
He does.
Yeah, maybe they just stuck out to me, but Jello Biafra. Nobody sings like Jello Biafra sings. when you hear Jello Biafra sing or even do spoken word, you know you're listening to Jello Biafra.
The last time we hung out in person, you did Jello Biafra impression, and it almost killed me. I started coughing so hard.
I don't even remember what I said. You know, maybe sometime I can do it again, but I got to do it, you know, when no one's expecting
it. Yeah, it has to be.
So they think
it has to be spur of the moment.
You got to be spur of the moment. And then people will think Jello's on the show.
Right. They'll think that he's really here.
They got Jello Biafra on the podcast.
How'd they get Jello?
Yeah. We got Jello Biafra in the studio today. Studio, and by studio, I mean online. We don't have a studio. I bought that vinyl as soon as I could find it. I'm pretty sure that's another Love Garden find. That I found when I was on a trip up there.
Which album?
Give Me Convenience or Give Me Death.
Okay.
So I bought that as soon as I found it. That one was the one that was kind of the most readily available back then, I think, too.
Huh.
Which is probably why it was the first one I've heard. I will say, for being such an influential band, Dead Kennedys have a shockingly small discography. They didn't release a whole lot. They released a lot of singles. It was a lot of singles.
Yeah, their beef with the PRMC and then Oprah kind of destroyed the band. And from what it sounds like, Jello kind of may have actually screwed his bandmates over. I mean, there could be some merit to their claims. I'm pretty ambivalent to it.
Alternative Chemicals had Millions of Dead Cops, TSOL. Nausea, Neurosis, Wesley Willis, Husker Du, The Crucifix, Bad Brains, Black Flag, Citizen Fish, and Pansy Division. That is only a small section of the bands that they had on there. They had so many fucking bands.
Jello was really excited about Crucifix, and Doc Dart is probably the only person with more distinctive vocal stylings than Jello Biafra.
Yeah,
that's true. I was a big fan of Fresh Fruit. I got that CD from Yesterday's Discs and listened to the shit out of it. And one of my friends, one of the Andover punk rockers I hung out with, he was like, if you like this, you should really check out The Crucifix.
Yeah.
And I was like, you had me at the name. Like,
right.
Anybody bold enough to have that name,
yeah.
I'm all for.
And the Crucifix, you introduced me to the Crucifix when we lived together.
Yeah,
same thing. You said the name Crucifix, and I was like, put that shit on.
Yeah. So I only had Fresh Fruit, and I really liked that record, but I never really got much more into Dead Kennedys aside from that. The Fannings had Frankenchrist, and we listened to that some. You know, and it was good. I just never got into it as much. Fresh Fruit, I still listen to occasionally. One of my favorite Jello Biafra experiences was being at Kansas Street alone on LSD and deciding to listen to Beyond the Valley of the Gift Police in its entirety. And that was a really good time. It was an odd thing to do on acid, but it was really fun. I really, like, I had a really, really good time by myself on drugs listening to that.
But yeah, I had to put them on my list just because and Frankenchrist was another album that I managed to find at Love Garden. But all those other bands...
Did it still have the artwork in it?
Oh, yeah. Oh, I'm going to get into that.
The H.R. Giger?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So... Yeah, I got Frankenchrist. So the original cover was a painting called Penis Landscape by H.R. Giger of, you know, Giger, H.R. Giger fame.
Right.
If you don't know who he is, watch the movie.
Why
Alien.
Are you listening to us?
Right. If you don't know who H.R. Giger is, holy crap, Google it. Anyway, he designed a xenomorph from Alien. That's probably what most people think of when they think of H.R. Giger. But eventually they added the painting as an insert and changed the cover to the, what's that organization?
Shriners.
The Shriners. That's when they changed to the Shriners on the cover. But they still ended up being served with a lawsuit for disturbing pornography to minors, even though they had a warning on the cover saying that there was going to be offensive artwork inside. Miners were able to buy it, and they got sued, and the subsequent lawsuit almost drove Alternative Tentacles into bankruptcy, apparently.
Thanks Tipper Gore,
the PMRC
Democrat, vote blue no matter who.
But they really only had four full studio albums, which it still surprises me to this day with all the influence that they've had. Frankenchrist and Give Me Convenience or Give Me Death were the two that I owned on vinyl. Still own them. They're still in my regular rotation. There's a biography out about them. Their biography is called Fresh Fruit for Rotting Vegetables, The Early Years. It was released in 2011. It's by Alex Ogg. So if you want to know more about the Dead Kennedys, you can read that book.
I've never seen them live. They broke up before I was a punk rocker.
I also never saw them live. I have, in my notes, I have seen them live. I have Frowny Face.
My second band is also from the San Francisco area. However, they formed in the 90s. And they have some pretty kick-ass bands in their lineage. My second band is El Dopa, who had to change their name to 1332 because of another shittier band called El Dopa threatened to sue them. El Dopa's bass player was in Econochrist, and he was also in Grimple, and their drummer, I believe, was in Grimple also. Nope, their guitar player, sorry. Was also in Grimple. And a couple of them went on to be in the Screwdriver cover band that changed all the words to pro-Jewish anti-Nazi lyrics called Jew Driver.
I didn't even know that was a thing, but I
love it. You should check out Jew Driver.
Now that I know.
Yeah.
I love it.
Everybody go listen to Jew Driver. It's really good. You know, they're just brutal crust. I don't know what else to call it. It's fucking ferocious. The first thing I got by them was the Skinless EP. and my favorite track on there is Headache. It's just so fucking savage. It is gnarly. It's so good. So fucking good. You know, and then they had the full length that was self-titled 1332. Yeah, everything great about Grimple and Iconochrist boiled down to the most brutal, ferocious crust punk you could imagine. Someone Saw God is another great song. Man, so good. I don't know if you're familiar with them at all, but they are.
I am. My tier. Familiarity with them is all through you, though. You know, most of the crust bands that I became familiar with, it's because I lived with you. I do like them a lot. And in fact, I think when I first started living with you, I really, really, really hated crust punk.
Yeah, I think that's true.
After a while of just listening to it all the fucking time, actually, I was like, I'm starting to kind of like this. Shit.
Well, coming from a metal background, I'm surprised that you didn't like it as much.
I don't know why, but yeah, I was just, when I first got into punk, I went all in with the pop punk bands.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe because like I was just trying to find something, you know, at first I wanted the stuff that sounded more metal. Then I was like, I'm kind of sick of metal. I want maybe something that sounds less metal. And I don't know.
Fair now, enough.
I just listen to fucking everything. Like I listen to pop punk, crust punk, hardcore, metal.
So I never got to see El Dopa. I did get to see about one, maybe two Grimple songs before I had to go pass out in Sarah's car because I got too drunk. Which is a huge bummer. But
yeah,
when they played at the outhouse, they stayed at Brandon's. And he was like, "Oh, those guys are so nice. They came to stay at my house and knew we were vegan and asked if they had to stay outside to eat their McDonald's."
That's nice.
No, you can bring your McDonald's inside. It's okay.
That's pretty respectful.
You're on tour.
Yeah.
Yeah, nice guys. I've always had politics that come from the punk rock scene. I haven't always listened to a lot of punk rock. You know, there's a time where I listened to much more chill indie rock type stuff. Mm-hmm. But El Dopa has always fucking stayed in my playlist.
Yeah.
They're just so good. I mean, I've been listening to them for almost 30 years at this point. They're so fucking good. All Chumbawamba and El Dopa have both been in, like, consistently in my playlist for, you know, 30 plus years, probably since I got into punk rock and since I heard those bands, they've been in my playlist.
You know, there are times where, you know, I'll be like, I need to chill on this band for a little while, but you know, maybe a year or two later and they're right back in my rotation again.
Yeah, for sure.
And a great example of a band that I couldn't listen to for a long, long time.
Because I know who it is.
Overplayed. But who I got way back into later is the next band on my list. It's a band called 15.
Also from the Bay Area.
Yep, they are from the Bay Area as well. They formed in 1988, and they are made up of what was left of Crim Shrine. And it's funny because you just mentioned Iconochrist too. When their first tour was with Filth and Iconochrist. So,
nice.
Yeah, it's all tied together. It's all one thing.
Fun fact, Iconochrist is from Arkansas, and they moved to the San Francisco area in the late 80s, maybe. Yeah.
Early 90s, I mean, that's when all that stuff was going on, so that makes sense.
Yeah.
I first heard of the band 15 in Kansas City, and I heard them, the first time I heard them was in Sarah's car. Sarah, who is from one of our previous episodes, that's the same Sarah. And Sarah and BJ both were really into the band 15. And I liked them because they were a pop punk band, which really appealed to me. But they were also, this is when I first kind of started getting a little more political. And I was like, oh, you can be pop punk and be political.
Right.
Because they, I think, were very very obvious about their politics and their music, especially.
Yeah, it's not subtle at all.
Right.
Which record did you hear first?
So the first one I heard was the 1999 release Lucky.
Okay.
That was the one that Sarah had in her car running constantly. I eventually bought that on vinyl, still own it on vinyl. Then I bought Survivor the next year when that came out in 2000.
That's a rough one.
Which is, yeah, that one's tough. That really plays into the lead singer, Jeff Ott. That plays into the more he got into this kind of storyteller way of doing lyrics that I hadn't really heard in other bands I listened to that really appealed to me, especially now as, you know, still an aspiring writer to this day. You know, it just the storyteller aspect of 15 really spoke to me. Don't get me wrong, I'm a big Crimpshrine fan too. I still love Crimpshrine, but I think 15 really kind of perfected, especially when 15 first kind of started. A lot of their songs were more about, like, you know, like girls and standard pop punk stuff. Nothing wrong with it.
Yeah, their early stuff sounds a lot like early Green Day, only much grittier.
Yeah, agree.
Yeah, it's really interesting.
Yep. But yeah, they were on Lookout Records, so they were on, you know, a pop punk label. They were on Grass Records for a little while too, which ended up being bought out by Wind Up Records, who I think is defunct now. But Wind Up Records had signed Creed and Evanescence, so
oh my,
maybe they were better off not being on that fucking record label. Just personal opinion there. But yeah, Lookout is kind of synonymous with pop punk. If you're not familiar with Lookout Records, it is, when you think of pop punk, that's, at least for me, that's the record label I think of. The lead singer wrote a lot of songs about things like environmentalism, pacifism, homelessness, drug addiction, child abuse, racism, sexism. So he definitely didn't shy away from politics. They were together from 1988 to 2000. They had a brief hiatus in 1996, but they have not gotten back together, as far as I know, at least not at the time of recording.
I think Jeff just does solo stuff.
Yeah, he writes books now too, I think.
Yeah.
But I'll always associate 15 with those Kansas City days, the happier times of drinking, not the sadder times of drinking.
Right.
So there, as far as I know, I couldn't find a biography about 15 or even Crimpshrine. Jeff Ott does write, and he has two books out. So he had one that was, I think it came out in 2000, called My World, Ramblings of an Aging Gutter Punk. And it consists of excerpts from a zine that he'd produced prior to that. And then in 2005, he came out with a book called Weapons of Mass Destruction and the Real War on Terror. If you remember 2005, and if you don't, I'll just tell you, we were pretty obsessed with the War on Terror at that time.
Yeah.
And he, in that book, I think he argues that the real terror is things like, yeah, like homelessness, hunger, child abuse, that we need to be focusing on those issues instead of funding a foreign war, which I personally agree with. So that, never saw him live.
So I'm just going to stick. My third pick was also 15. I assumed this would be a crossover. I thought we might both have this, but I couldn't not pick them because, again, this has been in Lucky specifically has been in my rotation since the first time I heard it. And I think the difference is I heard it over at the Central House, at Eric's house. That's where I first heard it. And my congressman was the one that really stuck out to me because it told you how to clean a needle. I was never a needle user, but I thought it was like really interesting and good to include a song that tells you how to clean a needle if you have to share it with somebody, because you know, so many people die from that. My favorite tracks from 15 are probably Family Values, because who doesn't love burning down a factory to spend time with your family?
That might be, that's definitely my top five favorite 15 songs. That song is awesome.
I'm a Man is kind of cheesy, but it's also like, now that I'm a father, like, I don't know. makes a lot of sense. It's a pretty uplifting song. A lot of their songs are not. And then, you know, Stolen Life has been super relevant with all of the, you know, police killings in the last, you know, highly publicized police killings in the last 15 or so years.
I think
years.
That song proves that this has been an issue for quite a while.
Right.
Yeah.
And then my other favorites are from Swain's First Bike Ride, Subdivision, and The End. He's a terrible singer. He's a terrible fucking vocalist. Like, his voice is shit, but it's in a charming way. I like it. And, you know, The End is, they sing off key, and, you know, it's almost yacht rocky, but it's super good. And, you know, difficult topics, but he also tries to include a positive message within it. So, you know, The End and Subdivision, it's all about, you know, working together to create a better world, even though this world is fucked up and shitty. And he talks about the fucked up and shitty parts of it, but he also talks about how it can be better. And, you know, getting past divisions, working together for a better world, you know. And then that Survivor record, the song Survivor.
That's a tough one. It was playing, to listen to.
Yeah. It was playing in the car, and my wife was in the car with me, and she's like, "What the fuck is this?" And I was like, "Just wait, it gets better." Like, because again, it's a song about being sexually abused.
Yeah.
And how hard that can make your life. But, you know, again, at the end, he tries to put a positive spin on it and encourages people to not give in to that despair, and that you deserve to be loved and treated well. And I think it's really important, especially in punk rock, because a lot of times that message doesn't come across. It's very nihilistic and misanthropic. And 15 has always had a more positive message at the end of all the tragedy and bullshit.
Yeah.
And also Summertime is probably the best Crumb Shine song.
Oh, that's a great fucking song. And then of course, Greed is, that's one of my son's favorite songs now.
Oh,
he
yeah.
calls it the loud song. he doesn't know it's called Greed yet, but you know, as long as he's listening to it, I'll just, that and, his two favorite songs right now are Greed, that he calls the loud song, and Politicians in My Eyes by Death, that he calls Tissues in My Eyes. And I'm like, close enough. it makes sense to him.
I hate it when I have tissues in my eyes. All right, what's your next one? I have also never seen 15. But Paul Coran, who was in Crimpshine, lived in Wichita for a while and hung out with him some.
That's wild.
He was a super sweet dude.
Yeah.
Yeah, he lived in a Riverside-ish area. Mm-hmm. Paul and Sarah, they were... I don't know why the fuck they came here.
Right.
They came here. They were super sweet, really nice folks. And yeah, he was in Crimpshine.
That's really wild. That's really odd. You always wonder how people, like the most random people, end up in like Wichita, Lawrence, Kansas City. Yeah,
for sure.
And you just wonder, like, is it just because it's in the middle of the country and you just kind of like, you stopped?
Well, there. It's cheap. It's fucking cheap to live it's in cheap. Wichita. It is. It's not as cheap in Lawrence. And Kansas City is pretty cheap, but not quite as cheap as Wichita.
I mean, Lawrence is cheap compared to most of the country, though. When I look at prices in Lawrence, I think, like, fuck, even Lawrence is cheap as shit.
It's about double the price of Wichita.
Yeah.
For homes and rent.
Right. Topeka is the cheapest, though. Topeka is the cheapest city, the cheapest sizable city in Kansas. I'm not counting, like, Spitwater and Western Kansas and places like that, but like,
but it's Topeka, man. There's no way.
Hey, Leahy listens to this.
So there is a documentary about the East Bay scene, called Turn It Around, and it's about East Bay, Lookout Records, Gilman Street, and Jeff. I don't think Jeff Ott's in it, but Paul is in it, and some other bands that we've talked about have been in it. That's a good documentary. I would really like to review that. I don't remember where it is available to watch. I think on Prime.
Yeah, maybe. Tubi.
I'm not sure.
Maybe on Tubi.
Tubi. Actually, it might be YouTube at this point. I don't know. Oh, yeah.
YouTube or Tubi are kind of our go-tos.
I know you can rent it on Prime.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it might be on YouTube at this point. But everybody should watch that documentary, too, if you care about the eSpace scene. It's really good. Mm-hmm. I'll get more into my feelings on it when we review it, if we review it.
For our other podcast, Punk Movie Review, if anyone would like to listen.
Do it.
Yeah. All right. I think the title
kind
of says it all.
Your fourth pick.
So my penultimate favorite band, in no particular order, but my fourth one, my next to last, there's this band called Rudimentary P&I, and they are... I said there were two bands that are on my top 10 list every fucking time. Rudimentary P&I is one of those bands. They're always on my top 10 list and have been since the first time I heard them at Kansas Street. I'm pretty sure Kansas Street was the first place I heard them.
Did you have NOFX? I heard they suck live.
Technically, I did hear 10 seconds of a cover of Nothing But a Nightmare off of the album Death Church on NOFX's I Heard They Suck Live, which is how I first found out about them, actually. So
nice.
Rudimentary P&I formed in London in 1980, and they are the only band on my list that has never changed their lineup. Since 1980, they're still together. They've had the same three people: Nick Blinko on guitar vocals, and he also writes lyrics; Grant Matthews on bass, and he also writes lyrics; and Joe Greville on drums. Same lineup since 1980. And yeah, Nick Blinko does all the artwork for their album covers. He's an artist on top of being a musician. His art is phenomenal. He is one of my favorite modern artists. Nick Blinko himself has a schizophrenic disorder. I forget the official, I think that's what it's called, schizophrenic disorder. And so it has definitely, you can tell when you listen to his music and look at his art that he does. It has fueled his creativity, I think, for the better. I mean, I don't think anyone else could make art and music like this. So they played their first show in London, 1981, with two bands. One of them is on this list, the Subhumans, and another one maybe should be on some top list, called Flux of Pink Indians.
You'll know why I'm laughing here in a minute.
So the first time I heard them was on NOFX's I Heard They Suck Live. He was trying to make fun of Crass, and I don't remember who. Somebody said, there's a good Crass band called Rudimentary P&I, because they were on Crass Records. Mm-hmm. And they started to play
Melvin were arguing about it.
What's that?
Mike and Melvin were arguing.
Oh, yeah.
Melvin talked about how he got a new Crass record. Mm-hmm. And Mike said they sucked.
Yeah.
And then Mike said, except for Rudimentary P&I.
Yes.
And then they played Nothing But a Nightmare.
And I heard that and I wanted to know more, which I ended up hearing it on Kansas Street. And I think I want to say it was Aaron who played me Death Church.
Oh,
pretty sure Death Church was the one that they had, because that was that was the one that had Nothing But a Nightmare on it.
And I believe is Rotten to the Core on that one also.
Yeah,
that's my favorite Rudimentary P&I song.
That is
Rotten to the Core.
That album is still one of my favorite albums, along with another Rudimentary P&I album called Cacophony, which I also own on vinyl. And then, so I own Cacophony, Death Church, Farce, and Pope Adrian. Yeah, people just call it Pope Adrian for short. That's the one that has the Popus Adrianus through the entire album that you said drives you kind of nuts, right?
Yeah. It just hits my brain in a certain way, like a ticking clock.
Yeah.
I had a recurring nightmare as a kid that involved a ticking clock. Mm-hmm. So whenever I hear a ticking clock or a repetitive word over and over, it really reminds me of that dream and I get like really anxious about it. So
yeah,
I like that record. I like the concept of it, mm-hmm. but I can only listen to it a right. little bit at a time or it will drive me fucking crazy.
It's funny. I just listened to it today cause I hadn't heard it in a long time. Mm-hmm. It is a solid album still. After a while you kind of start to ignore, mm-hmm. You start to ignore it. Then you think maybe you're going insane. which is, I think, the intent. Yeah. I think one of the things I really liked about Rudimentary Penai, and still like about Rudimentary Penai, is there is, as much as I hate to admit, a little bit of goth in me. And I had previously been a Misfits fan. I still am. I still like the Misfits. In the same way that I like a fast food burger every once in a while.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Like, don't get me wrong.
It's not substantial, but it's fun.
Right. I like the Misfits, but when I first heard Rudimentary Penai, I thought, you know, this is what I think I wanted the Misfits to be.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
And they're more like getting a filet mignon instead of a burger. Like, it's just, it's a, you know, not trying to talk shit on the Misfits. And if you're a Misfits fan, I am also a Misfits fan. But Rudimentary Penai, if you like the Misfits, you will love Rudimentary Penai. Yeah, their music is just, it's insanely creative. And the book that was written, autobiography by Nick Blanco, is called Primal Screamer. And that is appropriate for the way that he sings. There's a lot of rage in there. It's basically anarcho-punk mixed with existential horror. There's a lot of rage and frustration in it. And that really appealed to me when I was younger. There's a magazine called Revolver in the US, and they basically, their excerpt from their article was, it merges 80s anarcho-punk into seething death rock via the nightmarish poetry of certifiably schizoid frontman Nick Blanco. And that's fucking accurate. Holy crap. I could probably talk about Rudimentary Penai all night too. I love everything they put out. I love Nick Blanco's art. Yeah, and that the lineup of those three, it just works still does to this day.
Reading the Day the Country Died book, I started skipping ahead. Instead of reading chapter by chapter, which I did for about 100 pages. And then I started skipping chapters to bands that I care about because each chapter is a band. Mm-hmm. So I started skipping around and I read the Rudimentary Penai chapter. And yeah, I'd not realized that they were still functionally a band.
Yeah.
And they, you know, basically seems like every 5 or so years they decide to get together and release an EP and then go back into their caves or whatever until they decide to release another 7-inch or whatever. And it works for them and it probably works for their fans because you know, they don't play live. They hate playing live.
Right.
There's another thing in the book that it talked about. It's how much they hated playing live and being around people basically.
Which,
you know, stands to reason if you have a mental.
Right. Schizoaffective disorder is the official name of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it makes being in public very difficult, I would imagine.
Yeah.
So they get together every couple 5 years and release an EP and then, you know, go back to just leading their normal lives until they are ready to make another one and get together and do it. I think it's great for them and it's great for fans because it's not an oversaturation.
Mm-hmm.
They're not driving everybody crazy with nonsense. They're, don't really have a social media presence to fuck up on.
They don't even have a website. And I don't know where Grant and John live, but Nick Blanco lives in rural Hertfordshire. That's kind of near Cambridge, near-ish Cambridge in kind of rural England, north of London. His brother is Professor Timothy Blanco, and he is a professor of music at the University of Hertfordshire. So definitely a music runs in the family, I guess. Mm-hmm. You know,
what a great last name also.
It's perfect. It's, you know, I think I thought when I first heard of them, I think I thought that that was like a moniker that he had taken on.
Yeah.
But that's his actual sure. name. Like I said, the book is called Primal Screamer. It's probably going to be the next book that I read because I have not read it. So that's.
Yeah, I haven't either. I would like to. Mm-hmm. I think Sarah has. I think I saw her say something about having read it. So my next band is another anarcho-punk band from the UK. I swear we did not plan this out. We did not talk about our lists to one another before doing this. It's just strange coincidental happenstance that my next band is Flux of Pink Indians.
I knew it.
Who has also consistently been in my music rotation since I first heard them. They are a really good blend of Crass's politics with a more listenable music, I think, mm-hmm. to an extent. Granted, the recordings are not great, even on streaming services. It has that wobbly record sound. So it's kind of, I think it might just be tough to get a quality recording of them. And from what the book, The Day the Country Died, said, it's probably because Penny from Crass is a shit sound engineer. And everybody was really unhappy with the guitar tone that he put on records he recorded, including Flux of Pink Indians. But they're an excellent band. I love them so much. They have really great iconography. I have had a Flux of Pink Indian t-shirt, not the same one, but the same design, about 5 different times over the last 27 years. It's the All the Arms We Need design. It's two kids holding hands, and up above it says, All the Arms We Need. And then there's a peace and equality symbol. And yeah, they're just great. It's hard to pick a favorite song because I really like them all so much. Tube Disaster is probably their biggest quote unquote hit. Mm-hmm. I like Tapioca Sunrise, Progress, and Is There Anybody There? I think those are all like top tier punk rock classics, in my opinion. And they went on after they didn't like how Crass recorded them, they started their own record label. First was Spider Legs, and then they went on and created a new record label called One Little Indian Records, which they changed the name to One Little Independent Records to be more politically correct. And one of their first releases ever was the Sugar Cubes album of Bjork fame, and which is also one of my favorite records. But yeah, Flux Pink Indians, top tier anarcho punk, really, really, really good stuff. Listen to it. Get a back patch of All the Arms We Need.
I figured they'd be on your list somewhere. If I remember right, you had patches. Of them everywhere.
Yeah, their iconography is so great. The So Brave skull with the spiky hair is super good. And I probably made you listen to way too much of them when we lived together.
Yeah, I definitely heard a lot of them, both on Kansas Street for sure, Boston Apartments, and also The Annex.
Yeah.
So I think they were one of those bands that you never stopped listening to, even when you went through different musical phases. They were kind of one of your bands that you just stuck with that whole time. My last pick is a band that's probably a good segue, because this last band is a band that I have stuck with the entire time that I've listened to punk. And I saved them for last because they were the very first punk band I ever seriously listened to. I heard them in Oren's car in a Dylan's parking lot because he was trying to get me to listen to punk. And I said, no, man, I like metal. I think I even still had a fucking ponytail at the time. And he said, I know a punk band you'll like. And he put on this band called NOFX. And the album was Punk and Drublic. The song was Linoleum. And those opening chords just really, I mean, they struck a chord with me. Like, I thought, wow, this sounds almost like metal. Was not sold on Fat Mike as the lead singer at first. he obviously grew on me because I still consider them. They are in my top 10 favorite bands and have been consistently in my top 10 favorite band list since I heard them back in 1994 in that Dylan's parking lot. Yeah. I discovered other bands because of them. I discovered Propagandhi because of the Fat Records sampler, Survival of the Fattest. And they are not on my top five list, unfortunately. But like I said, it's always in flux. So they go in and out of being on my top five list as well.
For sure.
And I know I've told my NOFX story on the podcast before. But yeah, they were the first actual punk band that I heard. I went out and I got Punk and Drublic on CD shortly after that. And I was always a fan. I got their older albums too. I will be the first to admit not all NOFX songs age well. I can admit that. There's some pretty sexist overtones in some of the earlier stuff. But I'll admit at the time that appealed to me. So I've grown a lot since then, as they have too. So I try not to judge them by what they put out on fucking Ribbed, you know, back when, you know,
you know, and that kind of ties into what we were talking about in Suburbia with that machismo 80s hardcore scene, because, you know, that's kind of where they got their start. I think that, what, like 82, 83 is when they started?
They formed as a band in 1983 and put out like a demo that was just titled NOFX. And they're from LA. They later relocated to the Bay Area, which I think is a good move.
I think just some of them did.
Yeah.
I don't think they all did.
Oh, okay. Well, they were kind of billed from being out of the Bay Area anyway.
Yeah. Well, when Rancid got big, when Rancid and Green Day got big, I think they kind of just got lumped in with scene, even though they were an LA band.
But yeah, a lot of the stuff in that LA scene doesn't age well, especially stuff from like Ribbed. A couple of songs on Heavy Petting Zoo probably don't age really well, though. I do like that album as a whole in their really early stuff. You know, kind of talking shit on marginalized people, talking a lot of shit on vegetarians, which is funny because some of them became vegetarians. And I was not a vegetarian, still not a vegetarian, but I still thought it was kind of, you know, I was like, well, why are you talking shit? I mean, who gives a shit what the fuck people eat? Or Fat Mike specifically, his feud with Kathleen Hanna always kind of rubbed me the wrong way. Yeah. And I was never a big fan of Riot Girl music or really even Bikini Kill. But I just thought it was like, I'm like, why this weird rivalry between them? I thought we were supposed to be, you know, one team, right? Aren't we same team? But yeah, I don't know. I wasn't a part of it. I don't know what's going on, but just a lot of like kind of the misogyny and some of the earlier stuff. But that being said, you know, I always feel comfortable criticizing things that I love. And NOFX is still one of my favorite bands. They're the band that I've loved since I heard Linoleum back in 1994. And one of the things I always liked about them is they don't take themselves too seriously. There's humor in everything they do. And I think in the punk community, we tend to take ourselves a little too seriously sometimes. And even though we talk about a lot of serious political, social stuff, a lot of serious issues. I do think that we need to make room for a lot of humor, and we all need to understand that we're just a bunch of, you know, weird apes on a spinning rock, really, when you get down to it. We are ridiculous creatures, our species, and NOFX is a great representation of these ludicrous creatures we call humanity. And I feel like, you know, I kind of grew along with NOFX, not because of them, really, but my politics and my thoughts on social issues matured as theirs did too. So I have always kind of stuck with them because of that. It's hard to pick a favorite album. You know, The Decline is amazing, but is it a song or is it an album? Is it both? Is it a single? So The Decline is still one of my favorites, but if I got to pick the best albums, I'm going to pick Punk and Drublic because it was the first one I heard. And I think one that gets too little credit, Pump Up the Valium. I think that's a great fucking album. It's solid top to bottom. And I like that they purposefully misspelled Valium because Valium is trademarked. And they found out they were going to get sued if they used it. So
that's funny.
Honorable mention for a single that they put out was 1991 Surfer, which still has the most hilarious album cover I've ever seen. It's a riff off Bad Religion Suffer from 1988. And even looking it up today, just to look at the album cover, I laughed my ass off. Still, all these years
later. Just you saying it made me laugh. It's good.
Still, it's an inside joke. If you get it, you get it. If you don't get it, no big deal. Seen them live? Yes. I saw them in Lawrence twice. Saw them in KCK at Sandstone. Saw them in St. Louis. Saw them in Chicago, Illinois. Saw them in Norfolk, Virginia. And saw them in Tacoma, Washington. So I think I've seen NoFX more times than I've seen any other band who I am not personally friends with.
Huh. Nice.
Yeah.
I've seen them twice, I think, just twice.
Mm-hmm.
Both at Warped Tours. One in Warped Tour 96 at Sandstone.
Yep.
Warped Tour 97 at in Lawrence, whatever fucking park that was on the river.
Yeah, weird park north of the river. That's just what I call it. Yeah.
Is it north of the river?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's north. Maybe it's west of the river.
Yeah, maybe west sounds right. It doesn't fucking matter.
That's where the river curves. So.
Yeah, NoFX is one of my first favorite punk rock bands. Mm-hmm. Of course, I heard Linoleum. I think what I probably heard first was Don't Call Me White off of the Punkorama Volume 1.
Mm-hmm.
And then my buddy owned Punk and Drublick, and we listened to it a lot. Yeah, Linoleum was obviously the thing that sucked me in.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went and got some records. The only one they had at the mall was Liberal Animation for some reason.
Oh my god, that's one of their worst albums.
Yeah,
that might be their worst album.
It's really bad.
Yeah, it's terrible.
So I got that, and I was like, this is all right. And then later, I like a week later or something, I found White Trash.
Yeah.
So I got that, and you know, that was my favorite record for a good 6 months, probably.
That's
all I listened to.
That's a phenomenal album.
I'm a big Sap. Mm-hmm. So The Bag.
Yeah.
Really hit me as a angsty, depressive kid.
Mm-hmm.
It really touched me. I felt that song in my bones. And then I wound up trading my Weezer Blue album for Punk and Drublick to my friend. And then everything on Punk and Drublick is almost everything on Punk and Drublick is good. I'm trying to think of skippable tracks on Punk and Drublick. White Trash has a couple. I don't need to hear Googly Eyes.
Right.
I don't need to hear Johnny Appleseed.
Yeah. And I think those are the reasons why it didn't make it into the top two for me. I love everything else on that album. And it should be mentioned that NoFX has had the same lineup since that album. That album was the first album El Jefe was on, and they have had
the same lineup. He was on the Longest Line EP.
Oh, you're right. Yeah, technically the Longest Line EP came up right before that. But yeah, the album before that, they'd had
that was when Smelly was getting sober.
Yep.
Also.
So since the Longest Line / White Trash Tubes into being, it's been the same lineup of Fat Mike, Eric Melvin, Smelly, and El Jefe. And really, you don't need to listen to anything before the Longest Line, honestly.
Ribbed had some stuff on there that I...
Oh, right, Ribbed. Right.
Had only heard from... I heard they suck live. After I got White Trash, I was like, okay, I'm gonna get all the shit. So I got I Heard They Suck Live,
mm-hmm.
got the Longest Line, and I didn't get Ribbed, but some of the songs from I Heard They Suck Live are on Ribbed that I really like. Life of Riley is really good. Mourn Brothers is really good.
Okay, Okay, so Ribbed has a few good songs on it.
S&M Airlines does not.
It does not. Now, oddly enough,
is almost as shitty as Liberal Animation.
So S&M Airlines was the second album I ever bought by them. The first was Punk and Drublick. Uh-huh. And then same thing. I went to the mall. They had S&M Airlines. which is an odd so one weird. To have. And yeah. I fucking loved it because it sounded metal.
Yeah. Oh, I was like, yeah.
This is what I'm fucking
It's funny, their old guitarist played more metal riffs, but El Jefe was in metal bands.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's really funny.
It's interesting because, and then now, I still have the CD of S&M Airlines, and I found it when I was cleaning out my car right before I sold my old car that I'd owned for fucking ever. Pulled out all my old CDs, and I was like, oh my God, S&M Airlines on CD, and I popped it in. One of the last times I drove it, I was driving around listening to S&M Airlines, and I thought, wow, this sounds fucking awful. This is just terrible.
It's fucking terrible.
It does not age well at all.
And after that, I got Heavy Petting Zoo. And I think I'm like an outlier in that I really love that album.
It's a great album.
It has another really sappy song on there about being dejected. Trying to think of what it is. Release the Hostages.
Yeah. Freedom Like a Shopping Cart.
Yeah.
Is phenomenal. It's a phenomenal song.
Yeah, it is. It's got a lot of good songs on it. A lot of people, I guess, hate that record. I don't know. And that was the last time I really paid attention to NOFX because I got interested in more crusty and anarcho stuff, and NOFX wasn't really hitting those notes for me. You know, I wanted politics and serious punk rock.
Right.
So I kind of stopped listening to NOFX around 90. Late 96, probably. I was kind of phasing NOFX out of my rotation. But The Decline is incredible.
Yeah. Which they played live when I saw them last year in Tacoma.
Yeah, that would be an event. Some other songs. I like their cover songs. Their cover of Vincent is better than the original.
Yeah, I agree.
It can make me misty if I'm in the right mood. Really great cover.
I think they have something like 15 studio albums. They have the biggest discography of all the bands we've talked about, I'm pretty sure, unless you count all the Dick Lucas bands as one band. Even then, they're giving him a run for his money. And they own, I think they own at least most, if not all, of their own stuff because they started Fat Records, which...
Yeah.
They release their own shit.
You know, say what you will about Fat Mike and NOFX and whatever. How they handle their record label is pretty cool. They don't tie an artist to multiple releases. They do a record at a time and from what I understand, try to be fair about, you know, whatever. I mean, they're still kind of fucking capitalists.
Right. But you have to do things within the system that you live in. Like,
right. Yeah. That was what I was going to say next. Yeah. There, as far as documentaries go, they have a tour documentary, two seasons of a tour documentary called Backstage Passport, where they go to places that punk bands don't normally go to, at least as of 2006-ish. So they go on some wacky tours and record their adventures. It was completely recorded and edited, and then they sold the idea to Fuse TV so they could get distribution or something to that effect. And Fuse TV made them edit it more. And tried to create a weird narrative out of it, and it really kind of pissed everybody off. Season two, they had complete creative control and just released it on YouTube and DVD. There's also a movie called The Other F Word that is about Fat Mike. It's not just about Fat Mike. It's about all punk rock dads. Not all, but, you know, it's all about different punk rock dads.
Right.
And Fat Mike has a pretty good amount of time in that film. Unfortunately, it's mostly about fucking Fletcher from Pennywise, who, I know why anybody gives a shit about that band, but for some reason they do. But that's a pretty good documentary. As a dad, I like that. It's good to see that.
We'll be covering that documentary on Punk Movie Review.
Yeah.
So check that out. We'll cover that probably for next June. Father's Day.
And then there's also their autobiography, Hepatitis Bathtub, which if you can get the audio version of it, they do most of the narration except for members who are no longer in the band, mm-hmm. one of whom is read by Jella Biafra.
The very distinctive voice.
The other is read by somebody else. I don't remember.
I can't remember now. Somebody else we knew.
Is it Henry Rollins?
Nah, it's not Henry Rollins. It's
somebody. I don't remember. Yeah.
I should know. I listened to it relatively recently. I just listened to it on my drive from Seattle to Chicago, thinking it was going to get me through the whole drive. I got to about North Dakota, I think. Then I finished it. I had to switch to podcasts.
Yeah. It was a good listen. I enjoyed it. Even as a non-super fan of NoFX, it was a good listen. Because they've always been interesting to me, even if I didn't always love them as much as I did when I first learned about them. Mm-hmm. And again, wordplay and intelligence, you know, there's so much sarcasm and wordplay in NoFX lyrics that, you know, it's fun. It's interesting sometimes. And yeah, they don't take themselves too seriously.
Mm-hmm. Which is rare in punk, I think. Uh-huh. All right. Who's your last band?
My last band is from South Carolina, I believe. They are a crust punk band called Anti-Schism.
Was not expecting that one.
Dual male and female vocals. Mm-hmm. Some more brutal crust. They later moved to Austin and changed the name of the band to Initial State. Very similar in style and sound. It's just really, 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 really good crust punk. I don't know. I love it. They've been in my rotation for 25 years. You know, I've been a fan of them the whole time I've known of them. So that's kind of what my list is punk bands that have remained in my playlist throughout my history of listening to punk music. My favorite songs by them are probably Lines on a Map, which, you know, is basically criticizing borders and wars over pretend lines.
Right.
Their politics are exactly what I wanted out of music. They're just a great band. I really like the dynamics between the two vocalists. It's just really good stuff. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you'd listen to them much or not.
Just through you, actually. They're one of those crust punk bands that, like I said, I didn't really listen to a lot of crust punk before we lived together. Mm-hmm. And then I kind of got into it because it was just on at the house all the time.
Right.
I never owned any of their albums, and I honestly probably haven't listened to them since we lived together. Probably.
Your tastes have changed a little bit. You might be into them. I don't know.
Yeah. But I'm looking forward to the playlist that we put together,
because
I'll be listening to your picks and my picks.
As long as they're available. I think most of the bands that we have on here will be available on Spotify to make a playlist. So those are my five bands. How do we want to do our honorable mentions? Do you want to go back and forth again? How do you want to do that?
I think we should just go, let's just go through our list of honorable mentions. So I'm just going to, I'll blow right through my list. So for me,
I'm going to talk a little bit about mine. I'm going to talk a little bit about them.
Some of the people or some of the bands on my honorable mentions list have already been talked about by you. So, most of them, we won't really need to talk about, the first two, actually the first three, were not on either of our lists. This last two were. So for me, it's Against Me, which is a Florida folk punk band. Propagandhi is a Canadian political pop punk band. And I put in the same band, I know they're two different bands, but Minor Threat / Fugazi. I count them as one band the same way I count the Dick Lucas bands as one band. They're DC hardcore bands. Chumbawamba, who you have already covered pretty well, and Crass.
I didn't include them on my list because I wanted Flux on there more.
But, yeah.
I mean, Crass kind of goes without saying. If you have any anarcho band in your top five list, just know that they're influenced by Crass and it's a part of that, even if Crass isn't on the list, which Crass could easily be on the list, but I wanted to give Flux some love.
And I wrestled whether to put Chumbawamba or Flux. Crass is always going to be on the list, but yeah, I decided to go with Chumbawamba because their early stuff really is just really appealed to me. The only reason they weren't on my top five list is because of their later stuff, honestly.
Fair enough. My honorable mentions, the first one I have is Mankind with a question mark. They are a, I don't know if they're, I don't remember. I think they're from Pittsburgh along with The Pissed. So the band, The Pissed, P-I-S-T, had three bands all playing at the same time with sharing members so it was The Pissed, Mankind, and there was another one I can't remember what they are. The Pissed is basically street punk. There's not a lot of interesting shit there. It's just straight up street punk, which isn't a bad thing. I'm not saying it's bad that there's not a lot interesting there. It's just straight ahead street punk. But Mankind had more of an edge to it. It had dual male female vocals and just great songs and great politics. Really, really, really good stuff. Also been in my rotation for a long time. Civil Disobedience, from originally from Detroit, later moved to Minneapolis. Their first release was a tape called Political Prisoners. And then they had the 7-inch In a Few Hours of Madness. And the reason I like them so much is because they did really interesting stuff musically on those first two releases. Their bass player does some slapping, and they're really crusty. They have great politics. They sound like Muppets. What's not to love? The third one is Dystopia, because how can Dystopia not be on a list? Their doom crust, I don't know, fucking whatever they are. It's brutal, it's misanthropic, it's nihilistic. Good stuff. Love Dystopia. Logical Nonsense, similar to El Dopa and Dystopia. It's hard not, I had a hard time deciding who to include. Either Grimple or Logical Nonsense. I figured we've already talked quite a bit about Grimple, so I just went with Logical Nonsense. And then Area 51 is a really interesting band. They don't have much out there, and they turned into Death Wish Kids, Pretty Girls Make Graves, and Murder City Devils. Jesus Christ.
Oh yeah, Murder City Devils. Jesus.
So he's Murder City Devils and Cold War Kids. Yeah. So that's Area 51. Again, dual male female vocals. I don't even know what to call it. It's not crust. It's just fucking punk. I don't know. So fucking good though. That they're 7-inch. It's just Area 51. I don't know. I think that's what it's called. It's got a picture of a guy with a gas mask in front of a pyramid. And it's fucking rad.
Yeah.
All the tracks are great, but the one that stands out the most is probably Dead Cop. It's so fucking good. I don't know that I ever made you listen to that because I only had a tape of it. And it got lost for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's my honorable mention list.
I think the two bands from your list that I would pick to keep would be obviously 15, because they're on my list too. That's kind of a no-brainer. And probably Flux of Pink Indians.
Nice. Yeah. All right. Well, I can't really pick 15 because you picked 15.
Yeah.
So I'm going to have to go with Rudimentary Peni.
Mm-hmm.
And, man, I'm going to have to be that fucking guy, dude. I don't know if this is fair. I think I have to go with Subhumans.
Okay. Yeah, that's fair.
Is it going to be an Erico list?
It might be. It's shaping up to be. 15 still holding strong for pop punk, though.
I feel like, I don't know. Anarcho has an unfair advantage. I guess you picked two Anarcho bands and I picked two Anarcho bands. So, I mean, I guess that's kind of is what it is.
Yeah.
All right. So we have four bands.
Yeah.
15, Flux of Pink Indians, Rudimentary Peni, and Subhumans.
Yeah.
How do we whittle them down? You want to pick two of yours or pick one of yours and I'll pick one of mine?
Okay, so yeah, I pick one of the two you chose from my list, right?
Yeah.
Okay, you picked Rudimentary Peni and Subhumans, so I'm going to keep Rudimentary Peni on the list.
Okay.
Just because they've been in my regular rotation that whole time.
Yep. I'm going to go with 15.
Damn.
So, boils down to 15 and Rudimentary Peni. Who is the greatest punk rock band of all time? I think because it's on both of our lists, it has to be 15.
I guess it's got to be 15. I thought maybe you're going to say that they needed to like duke it out. Get to fight.
I don't know who would win in a fight between Jeff Ott and Nick Blanco. That's crazy.
Yeah. I guess 15 is the winner. Wow.
There you have it, folks. Yeah. 15 is the greatest punk rock band of all time.
The underdog for the win.
Scientifically factual.
Now we just need the God King Ty to sign off on this.
Oh, so. I don't know if he would do that.
Yeah.
Well, you can't argue with science, man. The science is the science. Facts don't care about your feelings.
I bet he would love 15. All right. I guess that's
science. It. Science, that, everybody.
That whittling down was a lot easier than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
5 seconds. Yeah. We talked about bands for like 2 hours. And it took and 5 seconds to narrow it down.
We'll make a playlist. It'll be available. Do you want to try and include honorable mentions in there? The only thing that's going to be tough on my end is probably going to be Mankind and Area 51. I don't know that they're streaming anywhere. I know they're both on YouTube.
Yeah.
But I don't know that they'd be on Spotify for a playlist, but.
We'll put a playlist together with the bands that are available on Spotify, and any bands that aren't, we'll just in the blurb for the social media post, we'll just mention them and be like, YouTube search this band and you will find their music.
Yeah. On the Facebook page, I can just put them in the comments.
Yeah. 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 That's true. Yeah. You can just link them to like a YouTube video.
Instagram doesn't allow links anymore, which is fucking stupid, but whatever.
Don't forget to like and subscribe. Don't forget to go to our website, www.prairiepunkpress.com. Has all of our links on it. Hit any like buttons that are available. Tell your friends. Tell your friends about us. Dump some money onto our coffee page. Whatever. You want. Whatever you feel the need to do.
Join Mr. Power as a patron. And I am working on getting Mr. Power some goodies. I'm probably going to make some 1-inch badges. Mm-hmm. That we will get to him. I know eventually we want to try maybe make some patches or t-shirts or something eventually once we have some money to do that with. Mm-hmm. Go like our socials, interact with us there, send us messages, send us emails. It's fun to interact with people. Post some of your favorite bands and songs, share that with us. That'd be cool. And, you know, as we've kind of wound down the punk house topic on our end, we plan to have more guests to talk about their scenes and punk houses that they were in. And I think we'll probably do more random stuff like best band list and things like that again. Just because it's fun stuff to do. And I'm gonna go play the new Star Wars game.
I'm gonna go piss and walk my dog and then go to sleep.
Yeah, there you go.
It's almost midnight.
No.
I think my dog is standing right behind me. I think he wants to go outside.
He's ready.
Yeah.
All right.
All right. Good night, thanks everybody. For listening, everybody.
Thanks for listening.
Bye.
Bye.